to transmission routers.
Hello and welcome to Queer Ear. I'm Rory Boyle and you're listening to the Transmission Roundhouse podcast that's queer thinking, straight talking, and leaves your knees burning from all the LGBT we spill. And speaking of burning, on this episode, we're getting a little steamy because we'll be delving into the world of gay saunas in order to find out if a combination of COVID-19, gentrification, the rise of the apps, and some complex insurance issues mean that this particular kind of queer venue may have reached its shelf life. Don't forget to hit that follow button wherever you're listening, whether that be Spotify or Apple, where you can rate us 5 stars and leave a review, no matter if you're a regular listener or you're joining us for the first time. And whether you're an experienced sauna goer or you've yet to dip your toe in the pool of desire, I think it's fair to say that you'll soon be better versed in bathhouses than Bette Midler, because on this episode, I'll be speaking to Nick Batt, the owner of Southampton's premier sauna, Pink Broadway, and I'll also be joined by Russie Jaspel, a professor of psychology at Nottingham Trent University, who conducted a study on gay saunas. But before all that, I want to get inside the mind of somebody who was not only a loyal sauna customer, but also did the literal dirty work. Antonio Blanche, a former Chariots staff member and cabaret star who performs under the name Mr. Blanche Dubois, I'm already obsessed, moved from Mexico to London to study and as a student worked part-time in Chariots, a sauna chain that was once the toast of London's gay cruising scene. When its Shoreditch branch closed its doors in 2016, Antonio wrote an article for Time Out describing what it was like working for Britain's biggest gay sauna, so I wanted to find out exactly how he landed the job in the first place.
At that time, we're speaking about the early 2000s, there was not such a thing like that in Mexico. So because of this fascination, I thought, well, if anything, I will just look for a job there because I kind of figured out the perks entailed that I could just go anytime I wanted. At that time, I think the entrance fee was about £12 or something. Me being used to Mexican money, it just seemed a lot of money. So I was like, oh, if I work there, I will save a lot of money. So, you know, just being able to come in and out when I wanted. So that's how it came about.
So I want to talk a bit about expectation versus reality, because from what you've just said there, it sounds like your motive for working there was obviously to gain free entry. I'm presuming you were mainly going there for sex. Were you surprised at maybe how many people were there using it more as a community space or for other reasons that go beyond sexual activity?
I mean, it really depended on the time of the day. Sunday evenings were kind of mainly like massive orgy. But within that, if you make a meaningful connection, it kind of pervades even beyond the sexual encounter. It's like entering into a space where there's no judgment, where you can be happy within yourself, within your body, within your desire to be with other men without judgment, particularly sexual judgment or homosexuality and all the queer spectrum. There's a lot of internalized shame. And so to have this space, it kind of puts this shame at rest and there's just a place to be.
This safe space that is created in the sauna, that has to be one of the parts that we need to celebrate the most. But one thing I do want to draw on quickly is that in the article, you do also talk about the fact that you were essentially a cleaner in that role and pretty much every bodily fluid under the sun you had to clean. So can you just take me through like a normal shift and what it was like dealing with some of that? I'm assuming that fantasy might have been shattered in some of those moments.
Well, it was certainly very grounding, very grounding. And that included picking up condoms, used condoms, picking up bits of blood sometimes, semen, shit. There was like a little dark maze. And I don't know whether this is kind of like intentional or not. The spectrum of sexuality is so broad. So maybe it was someone just so bold they decided to take a dump in the dark room. I suppose it was a very good sized one. And because it was dark, people start stepping on it. And as people started stepping on it, the whole of the dark room started getting bits of it, and people were sort of obviously stepping on it. They were coming in and out of the place. So that took a good clean, a good disinfection. That was one of the hardest things to do. The presence of blood in certain instances, I would kind of get alarmed. There was a bit, just a bit too much. Then I would think, oh gosh, what happened here? But even, well, even chemicals don't protect you against the pungent smell of shit. Well, I suppose if someone is into it, I think they will find it sexy. But unfortunately, I didn't.
Well, Antonio, I think you've definitely earned those free trips to the sauna. You paid your dues by doing that cleaning work. So somebody literally stepping in the shit and you mopping it up, you know, hats off to you. But one other thing I'm curious about is, as we know, the apps really have prevailed over the last decade or so, and they are now top dog in terms of gay men meeting and connecting. And we've also unfortunately seen the rise of chemsex, and there have been a lot of headlines about drug use at saunas and unfortunately chemsex related deaths at saunas as well. So I'm wondering if you did notice those changes over the years and saw them starting to take shape.
Yes, definitely. Mobile dating has just changed the game completely. But at that point, it was still good. What I more directly witnessed was the use of drugs. I remember two or three cases of people just in seizures. I remember someone convulsing. And I remember it was very strange in this case because I don't know what kind of drug he was taking, but there was moments of big lucidity where he was like almost reacting, saying, no, please, no, please. And then just going back into a convulsive state. And as you will point, there were several cases of people who perished in the sauna, particularly after clubbing. Good thing to do was just continue it in the sauna with the kind of guarantee of there's going to be some action there. I have seen that there was more and more help. That was something that I admired at that point. They were starting to invite people to do STI testing, and that was kind of an initiative of the saunas as well.
Final question to you. I want you to take me into when you found out that Chariots was closing and what that meant for you and what you think it means for the community and London in general, because you said it felt like a step towards extinction for a vibrant city like London. When I think of queer people that you speak about who use the sauna almost every day, where do they go?
Gosh, that's a tough one, isn't it? Chariots just dropped. And the sad thing was there was always an ulterior motive, which was just having the luxury flats, redeveloping the space for affluent people. And it's been doubled or tripled by the hit of coronavirus. More than anything, that's very upsetting. Some people just felt safe going to saunas and just felt that's the way they get to meet people and interact, or at least be in the presence with other men and feel safe. If they go extinct, then we go back into the shadows. To me, at the moment, it feels like we push back in the shadows rather than progress, because progress means that everyone is just allowing everybody to be, and that doesn't feel like the case.
So, as we've heard from Antonio, there seems to be all kinds of encounters that are shared within the sauna, and nobody knows this better than my next guest.
A good friend of mine, married with children, and all of a sudden he turned up, and I said, oh, you realise what you're coming into, don't you? He said, yeah, I've just got to speak to you. You know, I need to come out to my wife, and I've got no idea how to do it. and he's now successfully come out, and the wife has accepted the situation. I've had people come up and say, you know, I've left home for the first time, if you like, and I've come to you because I'm gay, and none of my family know about it. I've got a very, very good friend. He's in his 70s now. He used to work for the council, and when his mother died, he was beside himself that he hadn't had the courage to come out to his mum. Very, very elderly gentleman came in. Lovely, lovely guy. You know, you can imagine somebody in their 70s, you think, God, you were good looking in your younger days. You know, he said, oh, my wife died, and I'm lonely, and I want some company, and I feel safer amongst people that wouldn't judge me. All those sort of issues come out day after day after day. And I love it, because I wish I'd had that support when I was going through all my struggles.
That's Nick Batt, who owns Pink Broadway Sauna in Southampton, a business that has not only been negatively affected by COVID-19, but has also struggled due to a complex insurance issue, making it increasingly difficult for Nick to open his doors. As the effects of the pandemic continue to dominate how we live our lives, I asked Nick to take me into the intricacies of what exactly is happening with insurance.
The situation with the insurance is the government insists that I have insurance to be able to trade legally. Yet the insurance industry will not cover me. I've been covered with insurance for the last 20 years. Now I can't get through to them at all. Not at all. Oh, we don't like the fact that your property is empty. Well, I'll go there every day and check that everything's all right. Oh, well, we don't like the fact it could be on fire and you don't know about it. Oh, you might have a leak and you don't know about it. I said, well, I'll go there every day and check it out. You know, I'm there 3 or 4 times a week anyway. And if you ask any of my customers last year, they were so impressed with the signage, the fact you've got sanitation everywhere, your temperature was taken, you had to do the QR system or track and trace. You know, you only had 3 in the sauna, only 3 in the steam room and all that sort of thing. And my original insurer has completely gone from the adult industry altogether. They do not do the adult industry anymore. So I can't say, you know, they won't insure me. They're just not in the business of insuring me, if you like. And he could not and cannot to this day find anybody that is prepared to insure me.
I'm finding this all so frustrating because I think, you know, it just ties into the erasure of queer venues. And of course, there are many reasons for that. But this insurance issue is crazy to me. I can't figure out what the solution might be. And it's just going to get worse and worse as it begins to affect more and more businesses when they need to renew but aren't able to.
Yes, well, I can't get my head around the fact all that will go down the drain. It's got to be a public interest issue that I've got £150,000 worth of taxpayers' money thrown down the drain because the insurance company are holding me to ransom.
I think Nick's situation not only solidifies just how difficult it is to run a business like his in this day and age, but it also emphasizes just how meaningful of a connection can be made within a sauna. Somebody who put pen to paper in order to make sure these sauna experiences live on is Professor of Psychology at Nottingham Trent University, Russi Jaspal.
We interviewed sauna users. So, of course, these were people who were in the sauna whom my research assistant encountered, and they agreed to take part in a short interview about their experiences of using the sauna, why they were there, what they intended to do, and actually, crucially, the function that the sauna performed in their own sense of identity and sense of well-being. So these were quite unusual questions, really, to be asking, but we felt it was really important. And I think partly to dispel this common belief that saunas are used exclusively to have sex. And that's one reason why people use saunas, but it's not the only reason. And that's exactly what our research was showing.
Russi's research paper, Identity, Connectedness, and Sexual Health in the Gay Sauna, focused on men living in Leicester and the unique ways in which some of them use these spaces. Here's a bit more about what Russi learned.
Saunas are extremely diverse, and they're used by people with all types of identity characteristics from all types of backgrounds. They may have sex with other men, but they don't necessarily always identify as being gay. There were a lot of people who were not actually out to others, and so they really saw the sauna as a safe space, really, where they could enact their identities, they could feel like themselves. It was also a space in which the men could explore their sexualities and they could feel authentic about themselves and they could do the things that they really wanted to do that they didn't feel were necessarily possible outside of the sauna environment.
How easy was it to find these men and get them to speak to you? Because surely if these people aren't out or they're maybe questioning their sexuality, I imagine it might have been difficult to get them to open up to you.
Usually we would advertise it on social media and so on. And we're reliant on people coming forward to contact us. But our recruitment technique was actually going into the sauna and approaching people who were using the sauna, explaining to them the purpose of the research and the fact that they would be anonymous. We did manage to get access to people who wouldn't ordinarily engage with research, because actually a lot of research about gay and bisexual men tends to be with people who actually self-identify as such. It can be very difficult to reach people who perhaps identify as being heterosexual but have sex with men occasionally, or people who identify as something else. Because, you know, when you use the labels gay and bisexual, it will inevitably attract some people, but it will turn some people off. So the space was actually a multi-purpose space in many respects, psychologically speaking. Of course, most of the people whom we interviewed did talk about having sexual experiences within the sauna, but that was by no means the only use of the sauna. It was also a space to be able to drive a sense of acceptance, inclusion. And I think for that reason, it is really quite sad that austerity, but also the pandemic, have caused many LGBT venues to close, including gay saunas. And I fear that will result in a loss of a safe space for many people who might not ordinarily engage with other LGBT contexts, like gay bars, nightclubs, and so on and so forth.
One thing that fascinates me is that I still think that even as we get more and more liberated as a community, I know for a fact as somebody in their 20s that if I went to a sauna tomorrow and told my friends about that experience, there would definitely be some judgment there. And I think that generationally, the use of saunas is decreasing and decreasing. What do you have to say about maybe some of the younger users? Did they have different ideas of the function of the sauna by comparison to some of the older users?
So in recent years in particular, there has been an association of gay saunas with drug use and with also chemsex. Therefore, there is a lot of stigma. I think younger people may sometimes find it quite difficult to talk about their experiences of using saunas. The association between chemsex and gay saunas has skewed public opinion in a very negative way. They're seen as being quite unsafe spaces. It's important also to note that owners and the managers of gay saunas are under a lot of pressure as well, because drugs can get into saunas. They often do get into saunas. And we have some very tragic situations where people have even had an overdose within a sauna environment. We've also seen situations where people have been sexually assaulted, been coerced into engaging in practices that they don't want to engage in whilst under the influence of substances.
On that point, let's talk maybe a little bit about sexual risk and health, because that is something that your work concentrates on quite a bit. What do you want people to take away from that aspect?
So rather than necessarily seeing gay saunas as a risky space per se, I think we can actually shift our perception and see this as a space where we can promote good sexual health for gay and bisexual and other men who have sex with men. Examples of this might be that we can raise awareness of HIV/AIDS, particularly non-gay identified men who have sex with men. They may have had very little exposure to public health messaging around HIV, and many individuals report first hearing about PrEP within a gay sauna environment, and that's absolutely magnificent. If you can signpost somebody who is at risk of HIV to highly effective biomedical intervention for preventing HIV, then that's really fantastic public health achievement.
So, what can we learn from Russi's study, Nick's unique customers and his insurance issues, and Antonio's mostly fond memories? Well, there are probably several answers to this, but what's standing out to me above all else is that the gay sauna holds a lot more value in our community than it's often given credit for. As somebody who's been a volunteer testing people using saunas for HIV, I can tell you that my lasting memory is largely of older queer men gathering in a lounge area for Sunday lunch. We don't talk about the lonely older queer person enough, and this was a perfect and heartwarming example of how to combat this isolation. But back to the present day, we're still being encouraged to socially distance. And at the time of recording this episode, the headlines around saunas paint a very depressing picture. They show Detroit's longest running gay sauna, TNT Health Club, in foreclosure, one of Cardiff's oldest gay venues, Eagle 50, shutting its doors for good, and 62 men arrested for breaching coronavirus restrictions in a raid on a gay sauna chemsex party in Bangkok. I realise this is a pretty stark reality, and while my guests have highlighted that saunas can provide some amazing conversation, company, and resources, it seems like, thanks to many of the reasons that we've uncovered, the glory halls are gathering dust and the glory days of saunas might be behind us. I don't want to trivialise the situation, but I could not resist that pun. But seriously, even if you've never stepped foot in a sauna and have no intention to do so in the future, I hope this episode has shown you that they don't just act as a valid part of our community, they're vital to it. All that's left to say is that I've been Rory Boyle, and thank you for getting it in gear, keeping it here, and listening to Queer Ear.